This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And try to score, and sometimes when you don't do that, you give up goals, and it costs you because you're not able to score more than two or three. And I believe that's what happened for the first two.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing a lot of sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We'll be giving away tickets to the Michigan State Ferris State hockey game later on today. So give us a call at 884-4783, area code 517-884-4783. If you want to go to the hockey game between Michigan State and Ferris State, that'll be coming up. And so a lot of things we're doing today. And, of course, we got the reunion game coming up this weekend, going back to Jennison Fieldhouse. That's going to be a very special game. And we'll talk about that and see things going on there. Then Saturday we have the regular basketball game between Michigan State and Tuskegee. So just give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And the hockey team will be playing tomorrow at 5 o'clock, the game in Jennison, in Mount Arena. But right now, we're going to talk some basketball. We're going to talk some memories. We're going to go down memory lane. At least I'm going to go down memory lane with the coach, Gus Kanakis, our good friend. I was back there a long time. When Gus was here coaching, over in Jennison Fieldhouse, we saw a lot of great games in Jennison. So let's bring in our good friend Gus Kanakis. Coach, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I'm good. Well, I'm kind of a little bit under the weather, but
I'm
well enough to be on your show. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. We saw. I know you've seen more than I did. I saw a lot of games, of course, in Jennison. The first thing that comes to mind for me is. The game where Terry Folo was 12 for 14, and then he missed that last shot.
Oh, yeah. Notre Dame.
Yep, against Notre Dame.
Yeah, that was tragic. We played Notre Dame. I think they were number two in the country or something, and played them at Jennison. The place was packed, and we had a nice comeback in that game, I recall. We were about 2 points down. With 2 minutes to go, we were about maybe 8 or 9 points down, and pressed them and were able to tie them. And then we had the last possession, we thought. And at the time, we were more in running our last shot operation. It was usually would be Mike Robinson taking the shot.
Right.
But Terry got wide open at the top of the circle and let it fly. And we wanted the shot to be taken around the 7 second mark or less. For him, it was unusual. He had the hotter hand, so it was unusual that he shot an air ball. The ball goes out of bounds, and they inbounded it and got it to, I can't quite remember. I always forget the guy's name. He was one of their stars, and he hit the shot at the midcourt line to win the game.
Yeah.
And my strategy was to, I reminded the players, look at, we just run this operation that we have, just kill the clock, take the shot.
Right.
And even if we don't get a shot, we're going to take the number two team in the country in the overtime at home. So so it was on. He had an open shot, and he was had the hot hand, so you can't blame him.
Yes. Did that game, you think? We know that Terry had a tremendous work ethic. I mean, I used to watch him a lot of times. I know you did. He had practiced for hours and hours. And you think that spurred him on to practice even more after that game? Because it really seemed like he really was so focused and so dedicated. I don't know. Do you think that happened that might have spurred him on to work even harder?
Yeah, I'm sure it did. You're right. You analyze it. He was a hardworking basketball player. You know, he played for Bill Frieder at Flint Northern, as you know.
Yeah.
And he only played 1 year in the varsity. He was as a junior. He played on the JV, and we were trying to recruit. Remember what was the forward's name there? All-around player.
That was I want to say Bill something.
No, I can't remember Bill. His name anyway. Yeah. But he ends up going to Michigan, and we were well in the program. I mean, in the recruiting status, and then he went to Michigan. And
yeah, he was a 6'2 forward.
Yeah, right.
Very good defensive player.
Good, yeah. Turned out to be a good defensive player, mm-hmm. even though he was undersized, a good mm-hmm. defensive player and a good rebounder at that size. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I attended the games, and I knew Terry was among the players that Bill Frieder had. They were quite good, but we weren't recruiting him. And then Bill called me late spring and asked if we had an interest in him, because I had met him in my visits to the school quite a few times, and I said, well, if he's scholastically academically eligible, we had a tender, so we gave him a scholarship, and without a home visit, never met his family, and without him coming to visit, he signed it and came here. Next time I saw him was when he came here to register.
Boy, recruiting has really changed.
He turns out to be an All-American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it tells you that would a guy like that would never get through with all the recruiting stuff going on today,
no,
would he?
No.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, recruiting is just taking on such a heavy emphasis today. But, so that was just one of the games. I mean, he was great, and you mentioned Mike Robb. Probably maybe the best score that Michigan State ever had. I mean, he still leads. He started 3 years, and he averaged over 20 points a game every year. He's still, the career leader in average for a score, averaging over 20 points a game every year. You talk about a special player. And I used to say, Mike Robb was small, but, boy, nobody could block his shot, could they?
No, Mike. He had an unusual release.
Yeah.
He could, he could sky, mm-hmm. and he'd get that ball up there, and with his hand kind of extended, not the elbow bent, and hand on top of the ball. But he could effortlessly get up in the air for a jump shot, and he was very accurate and good basketball player. The thing about Mike that is a rarity of Big Ten players, he was named All Big Ten first five 3 years in a row, sophomore, junior, and senior year. And his freshman year, they weren't he wasn't
right.
eligible to play and receive that honor. And I read somewhere in the Big Ten records that there were only at the time, so a few years ago, there were only 11 players in the history of the Big Ten that have accomplished that.
Mm. That's something. Yeah, and, of course, I never forget that very special game took place in Jenison between Mike Robb and John Shumate his first year when he was at Notre Dame. They were both on JVs, and I think that might have been the only time I've ever seen a JV game packed to the gills. They could have sold tickets to that one, couldn't they?
Even the freshman game?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that the Shumate was quite a player.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
him and Mike hooked up, and there were so many great games in there, and so many great players that came through Jenison, and what are some of your memories? What are some of the better players? Some of the games that you remember?
Well, there were, like you say, so many great players.
Yes.
Not only that were. Played for Michigan State, but the other schools. I kind of, mm-hmm. I always remember when I was attending Michigan State games when I was coaching East Lansing. I remember Jimmy Rail.
Oh yeah,
Jimmy Rail from Indiana. He could fire that ball up right crossing the midcourt line. Some people claim that he didn't wait to get across the 10-second line, but he could fire it up and score. And then. George McGinnis mm-hmm. played at Indiana. My first year as head coach, he was outstanding player and highly recruited. And then at Purdue with Ricky Mount, he was he's something to, he was something to marvel. You know, he was well out, 6'3", maybe even, I don't know if he's 6'4", but he could shoot that baseline jump shot. He'd kind of fake the player, the defensive man, and even in the help-out man, you know, and they'd be crowding him, and he'd still get the shot off and make it with, you know, with good percentage. Lucas, you know, the great Ohio State team with Jerry Lucas. There's just been so many stars, you know, Kazee Russell from Michigan. Yep.
Yes, I remember when David Robinson came in there.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of great players that have gone through Jennison Fieldhouse. You know, that building is so special, and everybody remembers Scott Skiles when he played, Steve Smith, Matt Stanga. So there are just so many great, there, you know, you and Judd had some great, great sparrings and a lot of great, you guys definitely were good at recruiting guards. I mean, it's why I became guard you for the most part, but you guys, just did such a great job, a tremendous job in bringing guards into Michigan State.
Yeah, we did get the guards and, we're a little deficient in the big men.
Yeah.
Well, we had a couple, you know. I think Lindsey Harrison had played.
Right, Lindsey was pretty good.
Yeah, Lindsey was a great rebounder and good contributor, but they're kind of hard to get, you know. You try to recruit. I can remember Campy Russell, another great Michigan player. I mean, we were right in the. I thought sure he was coming to Michigan State, but he elected eventually to go to Michigan. He was a good all around player.
Yeah, he was. He was, just a great player. And I know we got Scott Skiles here. I think you were in on Antoine Joubert, weren't you? Or did you have a good chance?
No, he was after me. He came after.
Okay. He came afterwards. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. We had some great players, and you guys had some great recruiting battles. I mean, Kelser always told me about the one with him and Alan Hardy. He thought Alan was coming here, and he ended up going out of Michigan. Surprised him a little bit. Did you think he was coming here as well?
Yeah, Hardy, Alan Hardy.
Yep.
Right. He was actually the player we're really recruiting harshly. And Greg was of that same class, and eventually Harding went to Michigan, and we got Greg, and thank goodness, you know, because he developed into quite a player. And he played, you know, the center position for us. And remember, he had his first game on the road at Wisconsin. He had 27 rebounds.
Mm.
I always remember that.
Yeah. What do you think the difference was between players that you had who rebounded? You had some very good rebounders in that. What was the difference between those guys who got rebounds and basically the rebounders that came later on or the rebounders of today? You know, your guys back then, they were able to get to the ball and get the ball quickly and get it off the glass. How come they were such good rebounders?
Well, I think timing is important. Another good one that I had was undersized was Bill Kilgore. Remember,
yeah.
Kilgore
yep.
played at River Rouge,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very good rebounder, but he was only like 6'7". And I think it's quickness, jumping ability, timing, you know, the sense of it is so important. And so I think that's more natural than developed.
Okay. We got a message up here. Says, and I know you do. He says, does he remember a player named Ralph Simpson?
Yeah, I should mention Ralph more often, but of course he only played that. Ralph was a very highly recruited player. Like he's in that position like Jabari Parker is now that Tom is recruiting from Simeon in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's the second best player, but. In the country rated, and Ralph was right up there for maybe number one or two.
Right.
And you know, we were very fortunate to get Ralph because his dad was a good friend of Ricky Ayala. It's kind of interesting we're bringing this up now because Ricky Ayala was our first black player at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
That would be back when Pete Newell was the coach, which
yeah.
is I'd say that's back in 1948, mm-hmm. 49, maybe. No, I'd say more in the 1950. And then Ricky was a hospital administrator in Detroit. He came from Brooklyn, New York. He and Al Ferrari, remember Al Ferrari?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Al became a great forward for Pete Newell, and I just talked to Al a few days ago. He lives in St. Louis. He played for the St. Louis Hawks when they won the NBA championships. When the the big fella from Louisiana State played, and then Ralph was he played for Will Robinson. At Pershing High School, and was, very highly recruited. And he got down to another war with Michigan, and eventually he came here. And he didn't, as a freshman couldn't play back in that. That was my first year as head coach, 1969-70. And so he played on the freshman team, and then played the sophomore season, and then he went into the hardship program and into the pros in the ABA. So we only had him one competitive year.
Yeah, boy, but what a year. I mean, he averaged, what, about 20, almost 29 points, or 29 points a game, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
He
had a 43-point game. Of course, you got to remember that Terry Furlow, and he talk about an undersized wing, and he had 50 points against Iowa here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had back-to-back games with 50. One on home and one on the road, didn't he? I think he did.
He got one on the road, too. Yeah. I don't know if it was a 50, maybe 48, 49.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, boy, you talk about guys. They knew how to put the ball in the basket, that's for sure.
Yeah, Ralph Simpson was everything. I mean, he was a powerful player.
Yeah, he was.
Strong, 6'5", 6'4", and he big body, and he could shoot it outside. He could handle it. Yeah, that was a big loss to us. But we recovered after that. I had a player, remember Rudy Benjamin?
Yeah, Rudy was a really good shooter.
Rudy, at the time, Ralph played as a sophomore. Rudy was from Dayton, Ohio. He played, he was a sophomore when Ralph was a freshman, so they played together when Ralph became a sophomore, and Rudy was a junior, and so he had a very good senior season that year. We went out and won holiday tournaments at New Mexico, where New Mexico was a very classy basketball program, big place they played in. They were always in the top 10. And we beat them in the first game of the tournament, and won the next game against, I think it was Holy Cross, who was coached by George, I can't think of his name. He was assistant coach for the Connecticut coach, Jim Calhoun, for years. George, I can't get it. You get older, you forget.
I'm doing a lot of that myself.
Yeah, I saw him and Jim Calhoun when we were in Germany, because Connecticut played there. George, he's been assistant for just about all of Calhoun's years, and saw both of them there, and it was a good reunion.
Yeah, Gus, how did you develop such a good friendship with Bob Knight? I know you and Bob got real close, but how did that develop?
Well, that's a good question. Bob came into the league when I was in my second year. And I ran across Bob during the NCAA tournament, and then the Coaches Association clinic, and we were recruiting the same guy. I don't know who it was. He was at Army at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was assistant to John Bennington. Now, John Bennington was an assistant under Pete Newell, and John Bennington played for Pete Newell at San Francisco before Pete came here, and John. And they won the prestigious, at that time, NIT tournament in like the 1949, the year or two before Bill Russell. And Pete was hired to replace Van Alstyne, Ben Van Alstyne, I think. Well, there was Al Kircher was in between. He coached only 1 year. And then Pete came in the early 50s. We were just getting into the Big Ten. So I met Bob Knight because we were recruiting a New York player when Bob was at Army and he was recruiting him. I don't know where the player ended up. And then he also was a disciple like I was of Pete Newell. He ran what was called reverse action, and had his own style of it, but he ran that offense. He copied a lot of Pete Newell's defensive philosophies, as I did, because I got to know Pete and John Bennington quite well when I was a high school coach at East Lansing.
Yes, you've ran into you've had some great relationship with coaches and players in the Big Ten, which, you know, that it made it unique. I mean, you were considered a favorite among many, you had great relationships with most of your players, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and when I'm with the coaches, because they always beat me, see? we had a reasonable record. I kid about our situation there, but the first, I coached 7 years, and the last five years of my regime, we had winning records. And we couldn't go to tournaments, though. There weren't many opportunities in those days for. The Big Ten didn't allow you to go into the NIT till later, and then there was only the one tournament, the NCAA tournament, because mm-hmm. the Big Ten teams couldn't go. They did later. They changed that and allowed Big Ten teams, of course, to go. So we had winning records, but we couldn't get invitations to the NCAA because there were only limited teams went. You know, at first it was only 16 when I coached. Then they expanded it something, and maybe eventually I think when I was the last couple of years it was 32 teams, and so we always ended up like around third, fourth place, and never went anywhere. That hurt.
Yeah,
because you know teams were. In fact, local teams, Vital at that time was coaching Detroit. And he had two or three very good years there in Detroit. And he was, 1 year he was in the tournament at the same time Central Michigan under Roundfield. Remember Roundfield?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Roundfield played for Central Michigan. And then later, Western Michigan got a, because they won the MAC conference championship, they got the goal. So, you know, locally we had three teams were going to the tournaments, and under my regime we never went anywhere.
Okay. Hey, we got to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing.
What does it mean to think, to be intelligent? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a conversation with Ray Kurzweil about the nature of the human brain. Can we build a mind? Plus Christmas tree science for the holidays and Alan Alda's new science challenge. It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up at 2 o'clock on Talk of the Nation right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Sunny with a high today in the low 40s. Tonight, a low of 31 and partly cloudy. Look for rain tomorrow, Saturday's high in the low 40s. Sunday's high around 50 with cloudy skies and patchy fog and a chance of light rain.
Give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. That's our toll-free number. Give us a call or send us an email, sportstalk at KFUO.org. Gus, I wasn't at this game, but a caller called in and said, what about the time when Van Pelt went against George McGinnis one-on-one, and everybody on the players just stood on the court and watched?
Yeah. We played him twice, you know, and played him at Indiana. And then when he came here, I remember George Perlis and Henry Bulla were assistant football coaches, and boy, they couldn't wait to watch that battle, that Brad Van Pelt against George McGinnis. And Brad held his own, you know. He's one of the most unusual players, really, Brad Van Pelt, because there's one guy that could play in football, and then come right into basketball and make a name and be a valuable player for you. The only thing is, when he got more famous as a football player in his senior year, he finally, I don't know if he came out at all. If he did, he only played a few games because he was in demand, you know, at banquets and things like that. So he was some athlete, played three sports, football, basketball, and baseball.
Yeah. You know, Gus, what I used to really like about Denison Fieldhouse, before Magic came, you know, I could go in, a lot of students, we would go in and just buy a ticket and sit right at midcourt, right on the main floor. It was no problem getting a seat. I always say it was before Magic and then after Magic.
Yeah, Magic certainly, when he played the 2 years, freshman and sophomore years, he revolutionized it and was very instrumental in arousing fanatic interest in Michigan State basketball. The fans really clamored to see him, justifiably so, in the team. And then the other guy that did that for a while, but then it dissipated, the fan interest, was Johnny Green under Forty Anderson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donnie Green was another good one. Yeah, he was a special player as well. I mean, yeah, a lot of great players came through Michigan State. You had Sam and Jay. Vincent were.
Vincent.
Yep. So there's been a ton of great great players. One thing that I wanted to talk to you about was with so many great players that came through here and coming through Denison Fieldhouse. I used to always remember, going and getting a ticket, buying a ticket right away. The place was drafty, but it was such a cozy atmosphere. I always said there was not, no matter where you sit, you had a good seat in Denison Fieldhouse. It didn't matter if you were sitting on the 50 or if you were in the upper deck and back in one of those corners, it was a good seat as well.
Oh, yeah, you could see it and up above there. That's right, along the balcony.
Yeah,
I attended the game. I was a student when Kentucky played Michigan State in 1947, and Kentucky was the number one team in the country. And Michigan State had a former player from Kentucky, Bob Branham. He played 1 year at Michigan State. Went in the service, and then when he got back, he could see he wasn't going to get much playing time because they had those players, Ralph Beard and Lou Groza and a couple other guys, and they were number one team. Adolph Rupp was a coach, and they played here at Michigan State, and Michigan State lost by 2 points, 47-45, and the place was packed. That's the largest crowd. I read in some publication that the crowd was 15,370.
I'm still wondering how they got 15,000 people in there.
That's what reminded me about how you mentioned people. You know, the corners, you mentioned the corners.
Yeah.
Well, there were about three of those corners that were the four corners. I don't know if they had the catwalk upstairs in the booth at the time, but in those corners, they put some bleachers.
Okay.
A riser with some bleachers, little beach. I mean, they wouldn't take a. There was a small space, but they put it in all four of the corners, and that helped. And then I remember students got in free in those days.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You were a student, and the announcer would say, move in closer.
Yep, moving. Yeah, yeah. Moving a little closer. Yeah. So you get a few more seats in.
Yep.
A few more seats in the fannies there. That was always a good thing going into Denison Fieldhouse because it was such a special place. What What specific memories did you have of it, Gus?
Well, all those, seeing all those games when I was a student, when I coached at East Lansing, you know, and following the team, and then I had the opportunity coaching here to learn from some outstanding coaches. Ben Alstein was a coach when I was in school for the freshman year, and then Pete Newell came in, and I really, as I mentioned, became a disciple of his style of basketball.
Yeah.
And then and then John Bennington, you know, listen up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, he was a very good
John
player.
John was such a, you know, he was an assistant, as I mentioned before, with John Bennington. I mean, mm-hmm. with Pete. He came from San Francisco when Pete came here. He only had one assistant. And then, and John was very good about helping coaches. And I'd go to the practices, I'd go to their office and visit with them. And John Bennington, you know, he just had that sudden heart attack and died suddenly in the field house, in fact, in the coach's office, in the coach's shower room that his wife and Bob Nordman, who was an assistant coach at the time and a former player of his, and myself found him there in the shower, and he had a massive heart attack. But that was a shame, see, because...
Yes.
You know, then I inherited the job. I would have probably gone on somewhere else if he was still alive, because we would have had some really good teams, and he would have stayed here. I think he would have been a lifer. So that was a shock, actually. It was one of the dissatisfying things of Jennison. But I just, the players, and I did, you know, naturally, when I became assistant coach under John Bennington, to walk in with him and Bob Nordman, and who was an assistant coach, and walking into Jennison for that first game as an assistant coach, and then going through the same thing when I became head coach.
Yeah, Gus, I know I always thought you were mistreated. You know, I stated that even back then publicly when the players had the walkout, and you had to suffer that abuse and basically lost your job because of that, because of the players' walkout. So many fans wanted you, you know, fired, and you did the right thing. You gave the players the chance to play again and earn your trust and respect. And I always thought you did the right thing, even though a lot of people didn't.
Yeah, you know, there was a difference of opinions. I did what I thought was right for our situation. They were sorry for what they did, and that's, I took that as the gospel, and told them, "Well, then let's play." They came back. You know, they didn't boycott the game.
Right.
They boycotted a morning meeting, and they walked out of the meeting. And as far as I was concerned, you know, they're going to be suspended. So when I got to the locker room, the assistant coach just told me that players are there, and the equipment man gave them the basket of uniforms, and they were sitting down. And when I walked in the locker room, sitting down, ready to get dressed and play. And so, you know, I was waiting again for someone to speak up and express their sorrow, because those things were happening. Other schools, you know,
exactly, they were.
There was tough times there, and a lot of different things happened. So, but I remember Lindsay got up. He was a good leader, and he just said, "Well, we want to play, and we're waiting for your decision." And that's when I said, "Well, I haven't heard them say they're sorry." And so I just said, "You're suspended." And they got up again and walked out. And then we had Pat Miller, you know, he's another one of my favorites. He was a player from the Upper Peninsula, Menominee.
I was
fond of Pat because he came here. He started here when John Bennington was coach, but I helped him recruiting him. That's the first time I went to the Upper Peninsula, in fact, to see him play in a district tournament. And he was a JV coach, freshman coach, and so he had the task of, because this wasn't the break, you remember. This was the the break, you know, the students were still gone. So he had the task of collecting some people to play. The junior varsity guys were back home. So he got on the phone, you know. Now this is like the game, I think, was a 1 o'clock afternoon game. This is like an hour before the game, or maybe an hour and a half. And so he's trying to get these guys. I'm sure if we'd have beat Indiana with the team we had, we'd have had a forfeiter, because we probably had some players that weren't, you know, weren't eligible, like, to play. So anyway, we did play the game, and of course they annihilated us because they were the number one team in the country. But we thought, you know, Johnny Orr, who coached Michigan at that time, Michigan had a good team.
Yes, they did.
And they all, John and I were pretty close, and he told me that he figured that we might beat them because we had a good team. Mm-hmm. We were credible.
Yep.
And in fact, that team ended up double figures in wins. I think 17 wins, 7 losses. Didn't go to any tournament and ended up maybe fourth or third in the conference. But I lost my pattern of thinking. Oh, yeah. Indiana came from Hawaii. They won a tournament in Hawaii.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so they had to travel to our place. That's why Johnny Orr said that. They had very little preparation time, or, you know, recovering from a trip. So we had a good shot. And Bobby Knight, you know, when I walked into the Jennison, his team was already there getting ready, and he told me, if you want any help, just let me know. And if you want Quinn Buckner, remember Quinn Buckner?
Yep. Very good point guy.
Oh, yeah. All-American for Indiana. He said, would you like Quinn to talk to him? Well, you know, I wanted to handle it myself. And I wasn't sure what I'd do when I saw him and he offered that. I thanked him, of course. That was not, you know, it was a career changer.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Michigan State. Yeah, a lot of things changed. One thing that Michigan State was in the forefront of, and it's in basketball and in football, and that was integrated squads and integrated squads that players played. And I was always proud of that. Michigan State was one of the first schools that had a fully integrated, basically, basketball team and a football team as well. And
yeah,
both played a lot.
Yeah, it was, yeah, Michigan State is, when they do something, they do it with class.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's for sure. And Gus, you know, the players here that came here, you know, they all, you know, another player that we haven't mentioned, Benny White, a little guard, but boy, you talk about a very good guard who was basically a point guard, but he could shoot the lights out too.
Yeah, Benny's good. I knew Benny, got to know him well when I was recruiting Lindsay. He was a good friend of Lindsay's, and I think Benny played on that same team. And in fact, when they played, that's my first experience with AAU ball. The Detroit AAU team used to go to Pennsylvania to play in a big tournament there, and Benny wasn't invited, didn't play on the team, but I took him in my car to drive down to Hershey, and was it Hershey? No, not Hershey. I can't think of the name right now. All the time I think about is Julius McCoy. Remember Julius McCoy?
Yep, Julius McCoy, another good one.
Yeah, he was from that hometown in Western, where this tournament was. And anyway, Benny has become a real friend, and he's playing tonight. He's going to be here.
Yeah, so you've got a pretty good squad. Then you're going to Mark D'Antonio will have the other squad. So it should be a fun game tonight, Gus.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
for sure.
That's what we're looking forward to.
How was recruiting back in your day? Before I let you go, just talk a little bit about recruiting. I mean, I assume for the most part you had to drive from town to town to do some recruiting, didn't you?
Oh, I guess so. First of all, you know, you recruited the state.
Mm-hmm.
Arduously, and you learn all the towns, you know. Even now, when somebody say they might say they're from some small town up north or something, and think that you don't know the town, and I got the point. Your coaches, they know them all, and And then, it was more difficult then. You know, if you went somewhere, you'd have to fly commercial, and traveling too was tough because you had more bus trips. But the times change, and it's still tough.
Yeah, it is. Probably tougher nowadays.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
It was sort of regionalized then, right? That most coaches recruited players primarily, like you said, from their state and from their basically a little radius, like all states that were immediately that were right by you. So, like with Michigan, you'd have Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and you'd probably recruit states like that. It's certainly changed since then because now coaches just go everywhere and try to get a good player anywhere they can.
Yeah, then you could use alumni to help you. We used to do a lot of recruiting and visits. We never did profit from it. New York City, that was a hotbed for basketball players. And so we used to go there and get in with some players, but we always struck out.
That's too bad. Hey, Gus, I know I'm looking forward.
I had one player though, Davis, Pete Davis.
Yeah, Pete Davis.
Mike Davis was an NBA player, his brother, and Pete Davis.
Yeah, Pete could shoot it too. Mm-hmm. Pete was a very good shooter as well. I remember Pete quite well. You talk about a good player. Another you that's the thing. You had a number of very good players during your era. Didn't you? You just had a lot of outstanding players that went on to be good citizens and basically good people in communities where they lived, got jobs and such. You had a lot of good players that came through here that went on to do other things, and I know they still love you, Gus.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot, Gus. Thanks for being with me. I'll look forward to seeing you tonight, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Earl. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. And that's Gus Kanakis talking memories of Jenison Fieldhouse right here on AM 870. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing.
Do you know what the quantum internet is or a spooky action at a distance? I'm Ira Flatow. If you don't understand anything about quantum physics, on Science Friday, here's your chance to ask a quantum mechanic. Also, remember the Polaroid camera. We'll discuss how instant snapshots changed our picture of the world. It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up on Talk of the Nation at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today's forecast is calling for a high of 41 degrees with sunny skies. It'll be partly cloudy tonight. Look for a low of 31. Rain with a high of 42 on Saturday. And on Sunday, cloudy, maybe some light rain and patchy fog, the high 50. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Let's go to the phones. We've got a caller on line one. How you doing?
Pretty good, Earl. This is Howard from Delta Township.
Hey, Howard. How you doing, buddy?
I haven't seen you or talked to you in a long time.
Yeah.
A little history. I was in junior high, I think, or something. I went to 1947, the semifinals for high school.
Uh-huh.
And that building was flooded. Mm. It was all the way around. We had to walk in on planks over the water.
Mm.
So they used to have 14,000 in there for the
yeah they
the
did
final.
I yeah. remember that yeah cause I was they had 14 I think I was going there was so, there were 14 a couple of years then I think it went down to like 12 5 or something like that
yeah they mm-hmm. Fire department got involved
yeah.
With,
mm-hmm. yeah
another player that wasn't mentioned in this previous was Pete Gent.
Yes, he was. Yeah, Pete Gent was
remember
a very
that?
Good
he
player.
He was fantastic basketball and ended up yeah. in pro football as a for the was a Dallas Cowboys, I think.
Yep.
Like.
Yep. Yeah, he was. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. The best guard combination to me, from the past was Skiles and Sam Vincent.
Yeah, they were two good ones. Two.
And if Skiles, if they'd had a three-point shot, then how many points would he have missed?
Yeah, he would have had. He would have had a ton.
I mean,
I think they estimated that game against Minnesota when he got like 48 or 40 something. They said that probably would have been a 60-point game when people went back and looked at the books and look at the shots at how far the shots were he took. He was such a good shooter and just a dead-eyed Dick, and unfortunately, Gene Katie took a lot of grief for not recruiting him.
Well, and the thing is, he wasn't as skilled as some players, but he had the will. And to me, he was probably the best leader they ever had, even ahead of some of the other guys. Because, you know, I remember as a freshman, he told Heathcote, "Put me in, and I'll win this game."
Yeah.
And he did. How many freshmen dare talk to their coach like that?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. He was a rare one, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Hey. Hope to see you sometime.
Okay, hope to see
good
you too.
Good luck in retirement.
Thank you. It's coming up pretty soon. I can tell you that. It's coming pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm getting along, so.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Yeah, Aaron, I'm looking forward to going over to Jenison tonight and see a lot of the old faces from when I was in there and watching some of those guys and chit-chat with them after the game and such. Because Gus had so many good players came through Michigan State. So it was really a special time. And hopefully there'll be a lot of the fans will come back and enjoy some of those memories and share and maybe they'll get a chance to talk to some of the players. They had a lot of good players that have been considered Spartans here at Michigan State. We've just seen just a ton of them, Aaron, just a ton of good players.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, you're having an alumni game at Jenison, of all places, I think it's going to be a pretty special moment. Obviously, there's lots of history, and, I think anyone that's followed basketball throughout, you can go way back. There's lots of history, so, I mean, there's plenty of people to have a great alumni game and have it be a great time, so... they got the alumni game tomorrow, and they got the actual game tomorrow for the current team.
Yeah.
And they got a concert beforehand, so they've made a whole event out of the weekend, and students currently are graduating today, and I think some are graduating over the weekend as well. So it's kind of a nice little everyone, no matter what your age, you can kind of get involved and kind of see some history of MSU and going forward too. So I mean, it should be a pretty special moment tonight.
Yes. Now, are you graduating this weekend?
Nope. I got another semester yet.
Okay.
Somehow I said, hey, yeah, MSU, I want to give you more money. So, I figured I'd stay one more semester.
Okay. I know it's funny how things like that. I remember when I was getting close to graduating, it always seems like they come up with an extra class that you need or a class that you got to take that somehow you didn't get it in the regular rotation when you're going through it in your undergraduate degree.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go there because that can open a whole nother can of worms. So I think I'll leave that one alone. But I got another semester yet, so maybe they'll have another alumni game before I have to leave.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Strange things have happened around here at Michigan State. They've had a lot of things, but a lot of things. They have a lot of fun games. A lot of fun things to go for. So yeah, we've seen so many very good players and great players came through Michigan State, and they were really a guard university. I mean, they had some of the best guards ever in college. A lot of the great guards in college basketball have come through Michigan State, and their history in basketball is nothing to be ashamed about. They've got a very proud history in the sport of basketball.
Yeah, I mean, besides the big names, what are some of your favorite players that you've sort of interviewed throughout the years? or you've done stories on?
Yeah, I like Carlton Valentine was a good one. You know, he's coaching at Sexton now. He was a very good player, and he came here from Washington, D.C., as a 6'5 center. Very good center for an undersized center. Had to go up against constantly against 6'8, 6'9 guys. But he was able to get a shot off. So it was always good talking with him, even back then when he was an undersized center, but a very good player. He was taught very well by John Wooten, you know, the coach from DeMatha High School in Washington, D.C., just one of the ones. And we just had so many good players that have came through Michigan State, so many good guards that can shoot, like we mentioned, Terry Furlow, Pete Davis was one he mentioned. Benny White was one he mentioned. There were good guys to interview and talk to, too. Mike Robinson was one of the best. You know, great shooter, averaged over 20 points a game for three straight years. And as Gus said, three guys who were named first team All Big Ten for every year for a sophomore, junior, and a senior year. You don't have that happening that much today. Three guys getting a chance to be a special player, and you know he almost made it in the pros. He was the last cut of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he went down to the very last cut. So, but he was such a good player. He didn't get another chance from any other team because he was short. He was only 5'11", or 5'10", 5'11". But, boy, he could really shoot the basketball.
Yeah, I'd be curious, too. What was the interviews? How different are the interviews nowadays compared to back then? What's the big difference that you see when you're interviewing players?
You know, today's players are so much probably more knowledgeable about the game because the game has changed so much. So I don't know if they're more knowledgeable or they just know more about the game of basketball because they start playing so early and start playing AAU ball. So I would say it's probably their knowledge of the game. The players from the other old days, as we call it, they're most of them are pretty knowledgeable, but it was just different because they just didn't have that those kind of goals or those kind of things are going on back in those days. But I would say basically just the basic knowledge of the game. And we had a lot of very good players here, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obvious that we did. So, you know, do you know have they released how many players?
There's going to be about 40 players coming tonight.
Okay.
So it's a lot of players coming back from the past. Some I heard there are a few players coming back that were from the 40s and 50s that played. So there are going to be a lot of players here. Probably see it. Most of them aren't going to play, but there are going to be probably about 20 players on each team. So, you know, and maybe, you know, 10 to 12 of them will play, or you know they'll put masks on and they'll make them play. So, it'll be fun to see how they do it and how Gus is going to do it and how Mark will do it. D'Antonio would be doing it as well. So it should be a very fun evening. That's for sure.
Yeah, it should be. And I'm hoping maybe one of the alumni will be. What's the word I'm looking for? I want to see a big dunk. I want to see a big dunk by some 60-year-old man. You know, dunk, throw it down on someone. That should make the ESPN top 10.
Yeah, I know. Just briefly, I had asked Greg Kelsey to do a 360 dunk for me when he was playing during his playing days.
That's all I asked.
Yeah, he almost did it. He went up and then. He got midway through it and then he just laid it in, but you know so he said he had a little change of heart. I said okay, but I might have to remind him that he still owes me a dunk. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2:00, right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports right here on AM 870. You've been listening to WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and we'll see you on Monday.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.